Welcome to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 41. And what's up? How was your week?
Another quiet week, so can't complain too much.
Yeah, it's been quiet since the beginning of January, I think. I guess since CES wrapped up. And
yeah,
it's probably going to be slow until Mobile World Congress later this month.
Yeah, Samsung's going to kick it all off, and then MWC for a good week. Seems like a big show this year.
Yeah, it depends on, I guess, what you're interested in. If you're interested in Google things, then it doesn't seem like it's going to be... I mean, strictly speaking, Google things... I mean, there's always little bits of pieces of Android news.
And they have a huge booth there as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Google usually uses it to drop some little surprises.
Yeah, like assistant connected stuff usually.
Yeah,
assistant on phones.
Like the LG G6, I believe, was the first non-Pixel phone to have the assistant.
That was quite odd. That was a very odd announcement then.
Yeah, it was. And I don't know, at the time it was a big deal though, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Because it was Pixel exclusive for like 6 months. It's usually, for those that don't know, I mean, most people listening to this show probably are well aware, but Mobile World Congress is usually the showcase every year for pretty much all of the smartphone brands that are European or Asian or, yeah, pretty much anything but even a couple American brands. But for the most part, it's the HTCs. I guess that's a bad example to use.
All of them are bad examples right now.
Yeah,
HTC, Sony,
Huawei, Sony, you know, LG, like I just mentioned. There's many. ZTE. The list goes on and on. And it depends. I feel like Mobile World Congress has gotten less and less important as these little Android OEMs have started to kind of die off. You know, at one point, Mobile World Congress was the Android show of the year.
Yeah.
It still is, in a sense, but, you know, a lot of these guys are way less relevant than they used to be.
Talking about Mobile World Congress, they can always pivot to, like, wearables, because mobile, but in terms of whether we'll see, like, HTC and Sony in, like, 5 or even 10 years, that remains up to be determined. Whether all of these companies can pivot into like wearables and other areas.
Yeah, I mean, if you're using the examples of Sony and HTC, I would say we probably have like a year or two left for them. I don't think that there's any chance that Sony's ever going to turn a profit in the smartphone business ever again.
Yeah,
if they ever did.
Yeah, I'm not sure. bless Sony for doing it, because they do interesting stuff. Like interesting designs that never get traction in the US market. Maybe they have better luck in Europe, but they probably speak to a Japanese Asian audience for Sony. And yeah. HTC is pivoting to virtual reality completely, which is they're doing fine with.
Yeah, and I also agree with you that, you know, props to Sony. They've done a lot of things right. I mean, I feel like, especially on the software side of things, they've always strayed more, I don't know, clean Android, and I've always appreciated that about them. They're less fast to just put paint on everything, basically.
They do, Sony does stock Android, but they do weird customization sometimes that are just like throw you off from like stock Android. My favorite little example is how the app launcher, how the bottom row of 5 apps in the dock, they for some reason they put the names, the app labels there, and that always throws me off for some weird reason. Just looks messy.
Another thing I appreciate about Sony's phones is that, as far as I've experienced, they all tend to have really good vibration motors. I like that.
The Sony Nexus that never happened.
Unfortunate. And I don't think that was ever going to happen.
No.
What do you think about OnePlus? OnePlus is another big name. You know, it's kind of one of the more relevant brands. Do you think we're going to see anything from them? Or, I mean, from what we've heard, there's going to be at least some kind of behind-closed-doors meeting of some kind.
Yeah, maybe a briefing. But the thing, OnePlus has obviously grown in recent years. They're very popular. Everybody's very interested. But I guess the interesting thing with OnePlus is how they're moving to the premium market with the devices. It's in a way their audience has matured into wanting premium devices that have all the latest features, all the premium designs. And it's interesting to see whether OnePlus retains the people who want like affordable, what is it, like $400 phones at the time. So it's an interesting transition and an interesting example.
I think another reason for that transition is that smartphone prices on average have increased. And so, you know, now, I mean, when the OnePlus One launched, it was what, a $300 phone, and it was all of the features of the $600 phone for $300. And now they're saying, now they're basically pushing a $500, $600 phone that has a lot of the features they claim, you know, of the $1,000 phone or of the $900 phone. So it's not, you know, I think it's both. It's kind of, you know, they're still trying to build the, you know, the flagship killer, so to speak, but the flagship's gotten more expensive, so the killers have also gotten more expensive.
Yeah.
But it's also true that they're just getting more expensive on OnePlus's end and more premium, I think.
And I think it does leave an opening for some OEM to make that affordable device with a similar experience. And it'll be interesting to see if anybody takes it up. But yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, all of that to say, I mean, ZTE, Motorola, Samsung, LG.
Oh, Motorola.
BlackBerry. So, I mean, yeah, there's also those other ghost brands that are like, you know, like BlackBerry is a thing now again, and it's like, they're not really, like, they're not, you know, it's like, they're not really a brand. They're not their own thing anymore. It's literally just a brand name and a keyboard.
Keyboard. Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of brands like that that are like zombies, right?
You mentioned LG in that, which is, it is true, they are becoming a zombie, but LG, the idea a few years ago that LG would be relegated to this sub Samsung competitor that's really trying but not really gaining traction is quite fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they started, when they tried the modular G5, that was the beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end. Yeah, people like the G3, the G4, but I guess the final nail in the coffin was the G6 never using that Leica G6 song, which I am still very mad about. Totally blew that integration, but whatever.
Definitely. And then there's Nokia, however you want to pronounce it. I've always said Nokia my whole life, but they're another zombie brand, which, you know,
doing well. Android One. They're running with Google's this entry level Android One and kind of Android Go, and they're finding success from it. So maybe they are the next OnePlus in that traditional sense of affordable devices.
Yeah, it seems like that's what they've been trying to do. I don't know how successful Android One phones are doing. I just don't think, I don't know if, and at least in the United States, if the...
Yeah, at least in the United States.
If the value proposition of having clean Android on a cheap phone, I don't think that target market cares.
Yeah,
so I think Android One is struggling in the United States.
Oh, definitely. And I don't think most people care about Android, about clean Android.
Yeah. I mean, If they knew what they wanted, they would care.
But what people want is fake iOS. Let's be honest now. They want something that acts like iOS, that looks like iOS.
Give the people what they want. Fake iOS. So anyways, I guess with that, we can move into our first topic, I guess, of the day. Actually, let's do Pixel 3 Lite first. So one big question we've been getting is, are we going to see the Pixel 3 Lite at MWC? And my gut would say no, for a few reasons, one of which being, I think Pixel 3 Lite primarily exists for the India market. It may launch in the United States, as per David's report earlier this year, but I think it primarily exists for the India market. And I don't think a debut at Mobile World Congress would make a ton of sense for that. The second reason being, like I said, there's like 10 to 12 Android brands that are going to be showing off devices at Mobile World Congress. And I don't think that Google would want to be buried under all of that with a phone announcement that seems to be pretty important. I think that the Pixel 3 Lite will be pretty important if it, you know, touts all the camera features and it comes in at a price point that's decently low and is available in the United States. So it seems like it's going to be a really big deal, and I don't think that Google would want to be buried under a dozen other crap phones.
But the counter argument to why an MWC announcement makes sense is that it's global. In a lot of ways, this where Google has been big with the Pixel line is obviously the United States and the West, and something like MWC with the global international press audience would slightly play well to the idea of a light announcement. But yeah, another thing to add is that we haven't seen any indication, no hints, no rumors of this being the immediate launch timeline. We would have started seeing more groundswell
if we were going
to get an announcement in a few weeks.
Yeah, and honestly, even if it was being announced, the press might have already gotten the heads up at this point. So, I mean, that's one thing. I think we would know, because I think Google would already be booking like briefings and stuff, you know, and you know, maybe we wouldn't be able to tell you that we knew, but the fact that we can tell you that we don't know should, I don't know, tell you that
the canary in the coal mine.
Exactly. So yeah, I think there's three options. I think Google could hold. I mean, we're all basing this speculation off of David's report that it's going to launch this spring sometime in the United States, which I think it seemed like it came from a carrier source. And if that's the case, it seems like it's probably pretty solid information, not to mention the fact that I just trust David anyway. But if that's the case, it seems like, I think, three possible situations. Google announces it here in the United States, and it's kind of like announced at the same time in India at like their own event, you know, like multiple an event on Google's campus or something like that. Or in New York. Or I guess Mobile World Congress is the only other option that I can think of right off the top of my head, if it's coming this spring, unless some kind of Google I.O. thing. But that, it seems not in line with Google's historic tradition.
It would be a very weird
hardware announcement. I mean, it has been a hardware show in the past. I mean, you could list off plenty of examples. Yeah. The Nexus Q, for example. Or the, you know, the LG G Watch or the Moto 360. I mean, these are all I.O. announcements. So it's not totally foreign that hardware would be shown off at I.O.
But that would be a very long keynote if they did it.
I don't think it makes sense, but, you know, it's, I guess, a plausibility. If there's something about the Pixel Lite that we don't know, imagine Google angling the Pixel 3 Lite as, like, a developer device for developing nations, specifically for the next billion developers, right? Like, I don't know. Like, that's like an angle that I could see them going with it.
At the same time, it would still be too powerful, I think. The entry-level phones in those countries are nowhere near, what is it, the Snapdragon 710 is the going belief. But yeah.
Sure. But yeah, so Pixel 3 Lite doesn't seem like it's going to happen at Mobile World Congress. But we did have some news this week. One very, very minor report was via some site. I don't know the name of it off the top of my head, but they basically reported the Pixel 3 Lite and Pixel 3 XL Lite, which the names, man, the names. We could get into that in a minute, but apparently
they called that.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, the Pixel 3 Lite has the model number G020B, and the Pixel 3 XL Lite, or whatever you want to call it, is G020F.
Yes, the criminology portion of our show.
Yeah, so the Pixel 2 used G011, and the Pixel 3 used G013, and now this Lite seemingly is G020. So I don't think there's any really meaning that we can extract from these numbers, personally.
No, none at all.
Any thoughts on this? It's not really much to talk about.
Stepping out for a second, we haven't seen any leaks of the larger phone, the 3XL Lite, and I think that's the so interesting because the Pixel 3 Lite, to me, makes sense. It's a 6-inch screen. It'll be big. It's a nice complement to the existing 3 and 3XL. But if Google adds a 3XL Lite that has an even bigger screen, the marketing message, the sell to people, I becomes fuzzy to me. Because I think at 6 inches for the rumored Pixel 3, I think that's a large enough of a device for most people. And that adding another one would bring the price point somewhat closer to the entry level 3. So I think it would make more sense if Google just introduced one Lite phone, the Pixel 3 Lite, if they're calling it that. But sources have been confident that there's another phone. Past rumors.
What's our source on the screen size for the smaller one?
The actual people with the devices measuring.
Okay. Well, I guess we kind of have to believe them then.
Yeah.
But yeah, doesn't really make sense that it's in between 3 and 3XL in size, in screen size.
Yeah.
And then the XL Lite theoretically would be even bigger than the regular XL, which doesn't make sense for multiple reasons. Like you said, one reason being that device is going to get into the price range where it's not even budget anymore.
And since there's no front-facing camera on either of these phones, it would be very odd for the... I don't think the 3XL Lite is going to have a notch. I think it's just going to be an LCD, like the small one. So it's just going to be a really big phone. What are they going to do, 6.5 inches at least to be a real differentiator? That's a really odd lineup.
Yeah, the other thing to think about with the Pixel Lite stuff is that so I reported on the Pixel, budget Pixel or whatever, like 2 years ago now. And it's been in development supposedly for that long, basically. But right after I reported that, originally I was reporting on, I mentioned a Pixel 2 budget version, basically, which I think ended up being this phone, if I were to guess. But after I reported that, Rick Osterloh, for those that don't know, the head of hardware at Google, came out and said that Pixel would stay premium as a brand. And so I don't know if... I mean, it makes sense for Pixel as a brand to stay premium, and so I don't know if he was like directly lying or if plans have changed since then. Or maybe the definition of premium is just really fuzzy.
Or just a camera. That's the definition of premium.
Or maybe these phones will be considered premium in their book, and maybe they'll start at like $550. You know, if they start at $500-something, then they can still call it premium, and they can get away with that, I guess. But
they just lost India. They would be entering into the higher echelons of pricing in those markets where this phone is rumored to be supposed to be for. So
sure.
It's the marketing message around these phones will be one of the most interesting aspects compared to the actual hardware, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally. It'll say a lot, not just about Google where they stand today, but what direction they're going. If they launch these phones and they're primarily aimed at India, then that's a big deal. But the
fact that Verizon is getting it just throws everything off.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It's really confusing because it seems like, I don't know, it seems like the whole reason that Google can pull off this $850 price tag on these phones, or, you know, $750 up price tag, is like their software prowess and all of what they can brag about with the camera. And if all of those features are all equally there on the smaller Pixel, or on the Pixel 3 Lite, I mean, I feel like the standard priced ones lose their selling point, basically.
Yeah, like the reviewers for these devices, it's hard to recommend the standard line phones if the Lite ones are available right there. Also from the Google store, it just makes so much more sense. People just want the camera.
Yeah, and another thing that differentiates the expensive Pixels versus all the other expensive Android phones, I think, is the software experience and performance in general. Yeah. Despite all of the controversy that's happened with the 4 gig RAM stuff and the performance issues that people have had, I still feel like the Pixels are like the most perfect feeling user experience. And if all of that is translated to the light version, then that's another thing that's like, it dilutes the value of the more expensive model. So I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see how this plays out.
Would you be interested in buying the materials is one of the most obvious things I could do.
Yeah, I don't care about that personally. And I don't think that most developers would either. I don't think that most, I don't know, technologically minded people, at least those that lean on the technical side in terms of career path and stuff, like programming and, you know, any kind of development, really. I think those kind, that segment of the market, basically the market that Google aimed the Nexus phones at for half a decade.
Yeah.
I don't think that those people care either about build the quality or anything.
Well,
what is our Android? This Android subreddit basically has been clamoring for a rebirth of the Nexus 5.
Yeah.
For 5 years, which it was crappy. No disrespect to the Nexus 5. It's legendary. But I mean, compared to the phones we have today, it was crappy in many ways.
Yeah.
I think
made the 5X worse.
We just have lots of nostalgia for that phone. And
yeah.
And it was amazing in its heyday, and it, like, I don't know, it really resonated.
It was so cheap. It was crazy cheap for brand new LTE phone back in the day. It was a steal.
Yeah.
And all the subsequent discounts were very good. But yeah, so that's the point of materials. Good point.
Yeah. I don't think that would be a problem. But
I guess
I do think that, you know, I don't know. If someone walks into a Verizon store, what are the other $500 phones on the market? It's like, I mean, I haven't been into a Verizon store in like a year, so I don't
know. Massey's iPhone? Maybe?
Last year's iPhones? I guess the iPhone, if you walked in, it would be, you know, the iPhone 8 or whatever.
A Pixel 2 XL?
Or the smaller Pixel 2, maybe.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, I don't know. I guess another thing to remember is that all of these phones are on monthly plans, and I could see the Pixel 3 Lite being like a special promo on Verizon for $7.99 a month or something.
Yeah.
You know, that Apple's done that recently. I think the iPhone 6S Verizon has sold recently for $5 a month for 24 months or something like that. So it comes down to like, you know, like $125 or something like that. I could see them doing similar with a budget Pixel.
In terms of features, the one that I just came up with is the ambient display, having an OLED panel versus LCD. If I were choosing between the Lite and the regular phones, I would have to. I'm very used to an ambient display, so I guess that's one small feature.
Oh, I just thought of something else, not related to features, but a huge percentage of people that walk into Verizon store or any cell phone store and get a plan, they just want whatever the $0 a month or the $5 a month phone is. Mm-hmm. And if Google positioned the Pixel 3 Lite, you know, regular priced at like $400 or something, but it was on promo for like $10 a month.
Yeah.
And they were able to tout all the camera features just like the expensive one, then a huge percentage of Verizon customers would probably opt for that phone over everything else, because everyone's kind of aware of the Pixel's camera prowess at this point, and that's a very, very, every single phone buyer wants that, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing is Google's very interested in pushing units. Like, they really need to show unit delivery, and they really need to get their numbers up, and they really need to reach like critical mass with getting these phones just out there. And I could see that being one avenue by which they could do that.
Absolutely but at the same time, why do you need the premium one now? If I guess like the first 3 years they needed to get their R&D development costs reflected in the phone, so it needed to be more expensive, and maybe moving forward where things are shifting in priorities. But it's really making a hard case for the regular phones going forward, how they differentiate these devices.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe this year we'll see the Pixel 4 be even more premium and more in line with, you know, 10S, 10S Max specs.
Is it odd that we haven't heard anything about the Pixel 4 yet?
We know that it's done. We know that it's finished. I don't know. I think it's a little bit early. I think in the next month or two we'll see our first. I think it was March last year that we saw the Pixel 3 screen protectors, and before that we didn't know anything.
Yeah, that's fair. So, yeah, I guess we haven't even had the next major Android release yet be official, so never mind about that.
I think we have probably a couple months, a month or two. We'll see. Maybe earlier than that, but I don't know. So, yeah, that's Pixel 3 Lite. Any other thoughts on that?
No, I'm good there.
Cool.
So we have some small software stuff surrounding Pixel in general.
Yeah, we can chat about that real quick.
We had the February security patch on Monday. So there were some slight tweaks with like the About menu, so you can have quicker access to your phone numbers and account details right on the first page of the menu settings app. But I guess a more useful feature is the fact you can now schedule your restarts. So the Pixel's update process is very simple now, so that you can, it installs in the background, it optimizes apps in the background, so all you need to get the new version is just to restart your phone. But still, for some people, that's convenient to be bugged about. So with the latest, I guess this was an update with Google Play Services, Google added the ability to schedule your updates between 2 and 4 a.m. in the morning. So that's much more convenient to make sure you have the latest version of Android. And on the software front, Google on Monday also announced two new apps aimed at accessibility. The first is called Live Transcribe, which is this neat little tool that just basically transcribes all the audio around you, and it just shows up on your screen, so it's useful for reading. It's honestly much, it has a wider audience than just the accessibility folks, but those people who are hard of hearing or deaf will benefit from it. And the other app is called Sound Amplifier, which, as the name says, it when you're wearing headphones, it can amplify the sound that's coming into your device's microphone. So these are two cool accessibility features for Google that leverage machine learning.
Yeah, Sound Amplifier is kind of like a modern hearing aid a little bit.
Yes.
I mean, I guess modern hearing aids, real modern hearing aids, also exist. But I guess if you're, I don't know, if you're in a pinch and you need you're hard of hearing, and you know, I guess a phone could be useful.
That's hearing aids. It's with technology the way it is now, it's the hearing aids, the cost, their pricing is going down so fast, and I guess that's such a net benefit for society and people who need those hearing devices.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there's not like a Silicon Valley brand yet for hearing aids.
That's true.
Maybe there is. I just am not. I'm not in the hearing aid market right now. I probably will be because my dad went like practically deaf when he was like in his 30s. So it's coming. But I'm surprised there's no like Warby Parker of hearing aids yet.
By the time we're old enough and we need those, I'm sure neural implants will be a thing. That's going to be a very interesting discussion on whether our generation and older generations are comfortable with getting brain implants. But that's the next, should you give your kid a phone or something?
I think we have a few more should you give your kid a phones before that comes around.
Indeed.
I mean, we haven't even gotten to should you put a Google Home in your kid's room yet. I mean, I feel like that conversation has barely even started.
Amazon kickstarted that conversation yesterday with an Alexa API for kids' products, for baby toddler-friendly gadgets, and that was a bit wild. So Amazon wants to have your baby gadgets feature Alexa. So we're getting there. 100% getting there.
I guess this is a perfect segue. Did you see their Super Bowl ad, Amazon's?
I kind of liked it. It was funny.
I mean, it was definitely one of the funnier ones. It's like, I love it when brands become kind of like self-aware and parody themselves, you know. And for those that didn't see it, basically Amazon, they just did a gag commercial, and they put it was basically the Amazon Alexa products. It started off talking about the Amazon Alexa microwave, which is a real
thing. I wonder if people think, well, it's a gag. Maybe do wonder.
The microwave was real, but they went on to talk about all these products that they supposedly, you know, tested but didn't end up, you know, doing. And one of them, for example, was a hot tub. And if you got in, like, the entire ring of the hot tub lit up with, like, a blue Alexa light and talked to you. Made like, I don't know, is it the Bellagio Hotel in Vegas with all the, you know, fountains and stuff? It basically did that in your hot tub. So yeah, it was pretty funny.
Harrison Ford was there with his dog, who had an Alexa collar. And yeah, there were orders.
As always, there was a lot of very nice and awesome celebrity cameos throughout the Super Bowl ads. My personal favorite was actually a Google ad, so this is kind of a perfect segue to that. John Krasinski, those who don't know, Jim from The Office, basically narrated a Google commercial, and it was, I guess, I don't know how to describe it, but apparently there's these codes in the military that resemble kind of, I guess, your
skills.
Yeah, your skills. Yeah. Exactly. And so it was kind of like a heart tug commercial where they showed all of these, you know, documents, internal like military applications and documents with their skill codes, basically. And, you know, John Krasinski was narrating and saying, like, most of you don't know what this is, but for the 7% of you that have served, you do know exactly what these codes are. And then, you know, they ended up showing how Google's job search has integrated these codes. So you can type in on Google search veteran jobs, and then whatever your code is, and it'll show you jobs that are available in your area that take advantage of those skills.
Yep.
So, I mean, my wife, after that commercial ended, she was like, I hated that commercial. I said, why? And I was like, it just made me cry, and it made me emotional, and I'm going to be sad the rest of the night. Her dad is a veteran, so it really tugged at her heart. And then the other Google commercial was the translation one. I didn't actually see that one.
Yeah, it was interesting. So
I feel like the music in that one has been used in other Google commercials.
Those clips have been used in other Google commercials. That's like stock imagery for Google at this point.
Okay.
It's called 100 billion words. And the basic premise of this ad was that people around the world translate 100 billion words a day on Google Translate and Google Search and all the other products that use the Translate backend. And so Google's just showing examples of this translation in action. Again, like I said, the footage has definitely been reused by the past ads and whatnot. And basically, the ending point was, despite all the phrases, all the good words and good bad words, the most common ones are like, I love you, and hello, and just, it ended on a heartfelt note.
Yeah,
which is, yeah, it was a good ad. It was, it paled in the comparison to the veterans one. But
yeah,
I didn't feel anything from that ad.
You know what my favorite thing for the Super Bowl this year from Google was? It was the new Easter egg in Google search for the superb owl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just love that. I mean, I love all of the, you know, Google search Easter eggs. Do a barrel roll, and there's countless others. What's the meaning of life? 42. You know, there have been dozens throughout the years, and you can probably find a list somewhere, probably on 9to5 Google. But the latest one is superb owl, and if you search superb owl, is it still showing? Because I know it was like a little widget with the score for the game. Let's see. Yeah, it's still showing. So if you type in superb owl, it gives you a little like image of a superb owl. And it gives you the score of the game, which I didn't watch the game. I just watched all the commercials afterward. I didn't care about the game personally. But I feel like that was like the popular opinion this year. So I don't ever watch the game, and so I was just glad that, you know, my opinion of I didn't watch the game is just I'm the majority this year apparently. Ratings were the lowest they've been in, I don't know, like a decade or something. I saw a headline about that. Right. So
I can't believe I contributed to those ratings looking for these ads.
Oh, also a big news for Google with the Super Bowl this year. YouTube TV did not crash. So we got through.
Yes.
They were really pushing it. And it was, I mean, obviously ratings were down, so maybe the load wasn't as high as they expected.
Yeah, YouTube TV. They sponsored the pre-show, and like the YouTube TV branding was everywhere. So this is a part of Google's push to get YouTube TV out there by sponsoring sport events, and it's working according to them. They always see a lot of subscriptions around these events, so the money spent is well spent. But yeah. So one ad that we were all kind of expecting but didn't see was a one for Pixel Night Sight.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was an interesting thing because like a week before the Super Bowl,
yes, they started this campaign.
Yeah,
and the weekend before, the day before, it appeared like they were starting to go all out ahead of possible inclusion in the Super Bowl, but that didn't work out.
I think it was probably a good idea for them to pick these emotional ads.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think that it's really easy for people to see a smartphone on the television and immediately click the off button in their brains. At least I do that. At this point, yeah. I mean, maybe it's just because I'm jaded and I cover smartphones all day, every day, but if I see a smartphone on the television, I just immediately like tune it out. Fair, it's like there's too many pans and zooms and like, I don't know. It's just way too easy to ignore. So I feel like the emotional tugs were
probably
them getting their more of their dollars worth for whatever they spent for these,
and like preempting any future regulatory pressures. It was a smart play in the long run to emphasize the fact that they are a very useful service for the world, doing good things. Please don't regulate us.
Another thing, kind of on a bigger picture, is it's interesting to see how Google is like, they're building their brand in a positive light, like proactively. Where it's like, I don't know if you remember when all the Facebook drama started happening like a year or two ago, Facebook started showing ads like heavily.
Oh,
trying to convince you know, that Facebook is good for humanity and yada, yada.
Yeah.
And all these emotional, you know, ads that, you know, like this wedding only happened because of Facebook, and, you know, this couple is only together because they met on Facebook, and yes, the chair. So, yeah, I appreciate that Google is like, I don't know,
trying to get ahead of it.
Yeah, they're getting ahead of it. They're not responding to controversy with emotional, because it just feels so insincere when a company is already in the midst of extreme scandal and potentially contributed to a fraudulent election or whatever. You know, I'm not trying to start a politics conversation, but, you know, they're reacting to that and spending big bucks trying to convince you, no, we're not bad.
One thing that
they haven't gotten there with Google yet.
No,
thankfully.
Plus, they have so much more utility. I think that's their big saving grace, is that they're a useful service to the point where people forget about the utility that they're getting from Google, from their search engine, from maps.
And Google is way more diverse too. You know, it's like Facebook is essentially three or four products. It's WhatsApp and Instagram and Facebook and what's one that I'm not thinking of? I'm sure there's more.
I think you got it.
Messenger. That's probably Messenger. The tenfold. And whereas Google, you know, especially pre-Alphabet transition, even post-Alphabet transition, Google is just everything. It's Nest cameras, it's search engine, it's, like you're saying, tons of productivity use cases, it's, you know, it's they
Chrome
have a genuinely huge cloud business, and you know, G Suite and Chrome. Yeah, it's like it's not as simple as being just a huge. I mean, Facebook is really just one huge social network divided into four apps that they advertise to. That's really all the company is. They've tried to expand their horizons into hardware, which is seemingly too little, too late, and awful.
Yes, quite awful indeed.
But yeah, Google is probably far more insulated from these kinds of scandals than Facebook is.
Yeah.
Although the core of their business being still being ad revenue from Google, basically tracking your internet activity, is still it still makes Google get kind of looped in or grouped in with Facebook anytime anyone criticizes Facebook, because the core of the business model for Google still is advertising, as always. And
are people
tracking.
Just ambivalent? What is people's perception to ads right now? Do they realize it's necessary to get a free internet experience?
I mean, I think people are
whatever.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of accepted. It's accepted to a point. There becomes a point when, I mean, normal people, and by normal people, I'm talking about, you know, normal people I've just around in my life, which is, I mean, my wife is technologically normal, I would say. My wife's parents and family are, you know, in that category. Even my family, extended family, are kind of all in that category. And anytime I've been around them, it's like, it's just like ads are accepted and maybe even ignored.
Yeah.
For the most part. And until it gets to the point where you can't even use the web, which is unfortunately a lot of websites. And it's really frustrating. I mean, it's really frustrating to look up a recipe. I mean, this has been my experience. Let's connect this back to Google. My experience is looking up a recipe and clicking one of Google's like recommended recipes in like the slider or whatever. Like Google's actively promoting like, this is a recipe, you should click on it. And then I click on it and it's like impossible. Like they're just, it's overloaded with ads, even probably Google's ads, and to the point where it's like impossible to navigate and it's just janky and slow and whatever. It's like downloading like a 5 megabyte web page because it's loading like 20 ads or something. I feel like that's the point when normal people start getting really frustrated, and I don't know if people connect. I think most people don't know.
Yes,
that the majority of ads on the internet are served by Google themselves.
Yeah, agree.
I think that's like a connection that, you know, it's good for Google, but I think that's a connection that a lot of people have not made.
Yeah, absolutely.
That the web is basically powered by AdSense. And
what's it, DoubleClick and AdMob? And
Right. That group of networks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. I don't think people make the connection to Google's benefit, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that helps them with every single other corner of their business, knowing that they're not just associated with being an ads company. And I think that partly goes back to Google started not as an ads company. They started as bringing a real useful utility to people, which was indexing the web, right? Like making an index for the web was a big deal at the time. And that's a utility that Google has brought since day one. And it's the utility that people will probably always associate Google with. It just so happens that utility has been very monetized.
Indeed. All the data.
So I digress. That was the Super Bowl.
We kind of
got off track from the Super Bowl there just a little bit, but that's okay. Let's wrap up the show. What do we have? We probably got a few more stories, and we can just quit.
So you're Austin, Texas? There's a story you...
Yeah, so Austin is getting a 30-story Google campus, basically, which is a big deal. I mean, even Google's campus in New York is really a hodgepodge of a bunch of buildings. It's not really a standalone Google space. And that pretty much goes for everywhere Google is, except for their headquarters in Mountain View. So it's really interesting to me to see they've leased out this entire like 30-story skyrise, and it's just going to be a Google building, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know how that will that how that would work out.
Practically so speaking, conventional.
Like, what teams will be there or whatever, but
yeah,
looks like a nice building.
Yeah, but Google, it's Google. They do campuses. They do. It looks like a college campus, but this one is an interesting departure.
Yeah, and it's apparently right across the street from the existing Google campus in downtown Austin right now.
That helps. So
it will be kind of, just like New York, kind of like a hodgepodge a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is not altogether uncommon for companies like this. But yeah, what I mean, we know that there's a decent chunk of Alphabet self-drive Waymo people in Austin.
Yeah, still early on, definitely, and probably still there.
Yeah. So, what else? Who else is there?
They still have a lot of fiber people still there.
Yeah, for sure.
Fiber
Austin
spaces.
Is one of their early big markets.
And it'll be interesting to see how they transition into the future, presumably 5G stuff. Cloud, of course, there's a lot of Google Cloud employees there, enterprise management, that kind of stuff. I think I saw one or two Android people working there. Maybe they have a team, but not sure on that.
Well, in the big picture, this makes a lot of sense because I'm an Austin native. And I mean, I've been back a dozen times in the last few years, and it's going to be the next Silicon Valley, I think. It's going to be... I mean, it kind of already is, but it's very much going that direction, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, even in the last 5 years, you know, housing market has skyrocketed. You know, you can't even live in the suburbs if you're not, you know, moderately wealthy. You know, it's like it's being gentrified really fast, and it's the next. I mean, I think even when I lived there 5 years ago, it was very much already becoming a tech hub, and I think it's just more and more going to become that way.
South by is Austin, right?
Yeah, South by is also there. So that's another. I mean, Google has had a heavy presence at South by for the last. I mean, this past year they did the whole "Make Google Do It" house thing. they did Jacquard there. They did. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they've had pretty big presence at South by. I know Regina Dugan before, literally like the month before she left for Facebook, and now she's out of Facebook. So for some reason, she's just one of those execs that I've just followed. But yeah, so Google's gonna be in Austin in a few years. I think the opening is in 2021 or 2022.
So yeah, so 2021.
Yep. Also this week we had I think this was one of the more interesting stories on the Google Assistant side of things, was that Nest Secure became the second Nest product that now has Google Assistant built in and can function as a Google Assistant speaker. Apparently, the Nest Protect base station, I have one, has a microphone. And
yes.
I didn't know that. And that speaks to, we need to be really careful about what products we install in our home and whether or not they're tracking us. Because, maybe not in this case, I don't need to be worried, but I mean... It has a microphone on the back, and I didn't even know. It could have been recording my whole life. Apparently it's been put to good use, so that's good.
Yeah, so like the Nest Cam IQ, I believe, it can act as a Google Assistant speaker. It basically has all the functionalities except music and like using it to cast as a casting device. But other than that, you can ask questions, get commands, initiate routines, that kind of stuff. So it makes sense. It's you're keeping the Nest Guard in a central location in your house, so it does make sense to add assistant to that.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm at the point where I really don't need it because I literally have a Google Home Mini sitting right next to my Nest Protect, so it would be redundant for me. And I think this kind of goes back to the conversation we've had a dozen times on this show, which is like Google really needs to start thinking about, I feel like they're only thinking about the people who have zero or one or two or maybe three device Google Assistant devices in their house.
Yeah.
But I'm the 1% that has like 10.
Yeah. It's,
I have many complaints about how it works. It just doesn't work.
And again, people in housing, a lot of people live in apartments, all these ads for Google Assistant that always people would, big homes, multiple floors,
that's
whatnot.
True.
So So yeah.
Although I'm sure Google would love for those people to be their target market for these products because they're the ones with tons of disposable income.
Oh yeah.
So
and again, it's like $35. You're not really wasting anything.
For sure.
The utility you're getting. So, well, in other Nest-related news, Google and Nest finally responded to this Nest hacking stories, in quotation marks, of people, basically people we use passwords on sites even though you shouldn't, and hackers are using those stolen credentials to log into Nest accounts and pranking people, basically. I don't think anything nefarious has happened yet, but understandably, it's still the risk for abuse that is very great with access to your home, unlocking and stuff, so that's a very real threat. But so far, the incidents we've seen are people pranking other people, like messing with the temperature or making fake news announcements. So Google sent Rishi Chandra, who led Google Home and is now the VP and general manager of Nest, sent out an email acknowledging it was happening, reiterating that Nest itself wasn't compromised, and advising users to enable two-step verification, stronger passwords, and all those basic safety tools to secure their accounts and make sure nothing nefarious is happening.
Yeah, this was Rishi Chandra's fake news, basically. He was just like, fake news. He could have just replaced this email with fake news, change your passwords. And it would have been sufficient. He could have tweeted this. Why isn't Rishi on Twitter?
Yes, that's a very good question. He's from interviews, he always seems very personable, and I think he'll have a good presence on Twitter. So
I feel like a lot of Google people would have good presence on Twitter. I wish every Google exec treated Twitter the same way Justin Uberti does. Because the entire community would be exponentially more informed.
Yes, informed.
So, Justin, if you ever hear the show or watch the show, or if anyone tags you letting know we mentioned you, just know that we really appreciate you, and we think that you're doing it right.
On social media.
Yeah. So maybe you'll link the show or something. That'd be nice.
So, yeah. So that was the rounding out Nest news. One other very interesting. So Verily, Alphabet's health division, is developing smart shoes, according to a CNBC report. That's an interesting place to put the smarts of basic tracking in shoes. If this whole Wear OS thing doesn't pan out for basic health tracking, I would wear smart
shoes. I don't know if that'll work. It seems like it's doomed to the same fate that Jacquard has had. It's like, I don't know if this strategy of building really cool tech and then partnering with a company like Levi's or Nike or you know, traditional clothing companies, I don't think that that's really working out so well.
No, unless Jacquard finally happened. No, sorry, I was thinking of Zoe. Never mind, you're right.
Yeah, but even with Jacquard, it's like,
no,
for
that's
Jacquard
not happening.
To take off, they have to partner with an infinite number of partners, you know? And
yeah.
It's like, yeah, they got Levi's, but yeah, Levi's is from San Francisco, and they're the easy partner to get, right? It's like, for Jacquard to matter, you need to, you need to have Jacquard on everything. And I don't think every clothing company wants to work with Google to make to risk being a laughingstock, right? Like, because I think Google has a little bit of a, I don't know.
When they try other things outside their wheelhouse.
Yeah, I think they have a little bit of a reputation for doing things that are a little bit wacky with tech, and then it kind of like, I don't know. Like, yeah. Imagine if they had partnered with a glasses company to do Google Glass, and then
they did. Diane von something.
Are you talking about
the fashion thing?
Yeah,
the glass. They had glasses.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I mean, let's use that example. I mean, I was talking about the product itself. But yeah, like, even using that example, all these brands that associated themselves with Google Glass, their brand was probably partly tainted because of that.
So
I don't know. I don't know if that strategy is going to work in the long run. I think if Google really wants to do it right, they need to pick a product that they actually want to enter completely, right? Like, yes, Apple was never really into fashion. They never did anything fashion, really, besides the Apple, I mean, until the Apple Watch, right? And they went head first, and they hired an entire fashion team to design all these watches, watch bands and stuff. You know, like,
yeah,
they had tons of people involved that you know what they're doing, and they built a fashionable, wearable product. And Google would have, I feel like if Google wants to actually do smart shoes, they need to come they need to make a miniature shoe company inside of Google and make Google shoes.
They need to commit.
That's right. Like, this is actually a really good place to wrap up the show, because that's been a theme, I think,
yeah,
in the last few years, but especially the last month or two with like Hangouts stuff, and you know, more and more every day, the Google would be greatly benefited from actually committing to products,
yeah,
as much as they recycle them. If they just matched half and half, like recycle half, commit to half, that'd be great. You know, but it's more like recycle 85, commit to 15. It's like Gmail's the only product that's like invincible. Gmail and search, those are the only ones that are untouchable at Google. On that note, Google also, we mentioned this month or this week, killed the little notification thing. So that's going away. And also the old web interface for Google Tasks, which has recently been replaced by an interface in Google Calendar and Gmail on the sidebar.
Nobody uses the Android app.
The old web thing that you've probably never used, that looks like it's from literally 1999,
accurate,
still is going away. So anyways, I think that's a good place to wrap up the show.
Yes.
We've had a good one. It's been a pretty boring week, if our most interesting story is that Google kills off a 20-year-old Google Tasks web interface.
They should have kept it around. Nostalgia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks to Abner for joining me, as always. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.